a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12-Pack Radio. Get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the Betarank College Football Statistical Model, and the home of your new Colorado fan base, basically. Holy Moses, this is Brian Conger. Interesting first week of Pac-12 football and a monster week for Pac-12 football in week two. We have some massive matchups coming up. I'm Brian Conger. He's Rob Barron. We're here to cover every game from last week. We're going to preview every game for week two. Rob, it was an interesting, it was great to be back. It was nice to be able to just sit down and plop and watch Washington just be a beautiful, beautiful monstrosity in terms of what it's able to do. The destroyer of worlds on offense. It was fun to have an opening game that was really good. Obviously, Colorado knocking off TCU. Yeah. Well, what did you think about the first week of Pac-12 football?
I mean, clearly, if you're a Pac-12 fan, you know, like, you could not be more excited, right? You roll out of the gate undefeated. A lot of teams look fairly dominant in their games. I mean, all for the good, in a lot of ways, right? I mean, even USC, you could argue, like, righted the ship a little bit. The only team that had a somewhat shaky performance was UCLA. And they still won. You know, they faced a pretty good team, in their opponent, not just your run-of-the-mill group of five. But Oregon State looked better than we expect. There's still clearly some limits perhaps on where the Beavs are going to go and what their ceiling is, but like, they look good, you know, like everybody mostly look. I don't know if you guys are on Twitter and you follow like any ASU fans or something like that, or even folks around college football. There was like immediately, because ASU raced out to that touchdown, and of course, like, Florida had, not had the best quarterback play against Utah. And so it was like, you know, like, oh, man, like, I bet they miss Rashada now, right? And like, just like, oh, this is going to be a blowout. I'm going to bed. Then you wake up, you're like, oh, that was close. That game was dumb.
Yeah, how many pots of coffee and Red Bull were distributed during that ginormous storm that ripped through?
I mean, that's part of it, too. I mean, like, to be fair, right, like, there was the lightning delay, you know, it's like a wonky Thursday night game. Like, you remember that Cal-Washington game a couple years ago?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
We're going to reference, like, next year we're going to make these references and no one's going to know what we're talking about. It's going to make me very sad. But that Cal-Washington game where they had the lightning delay and then they came back and it was just the dumbest game, you know, after that. I understand that can happen, but... Yeah, like, having a tight one with the Southern Utah Thunderbirds, not great.
Not great. I think one of the things I loved the whole thing. I mean, just from start to finish, it's nice to be like back in the pool with college football. The missing part of my soul was the conference pride thing. And I know oftentimes the people say, nobody cares about conferences. I think particularly on the West Coast, where there's this inferiority complex, right? It's like the East Coast bias. Nobody pays attention to the West Coast. And normally when you have teams like Colorado that go out and just unload on TCU, the national champion runner-up, you get that sense of like, heck yeah, West Coast football is awesome. That was completely missing for me this whole week. That was the one real drag on everything, where I just had no sense of appreciation for it, because like you mentioned, the Pac-12 had an awesome week and it just kind of felt empty because, you know, all these teams are going elsewhere, but you kind of have to embrace it while it's here. So I'm glad that there was a number of big games. We should just, let's go. We got to rip through these games. There's so many of them. But we got to start with Colorado. I know it wasn't the first game that was up on the docket, but it was by far the most fun. I had such a fun time watching this game, looking at Shedeur Sanders, who looked awesome. Yeah. I mean, just throwing dimes all over the field. Colorado 45, TCU 42. If you're new to the podcast, if you're watching us on YouTube, watching Rob have a coughing fit and me forgetting to do my hair before the podcast, if you're watching this and you're new, one of the things that we're going to do is the way that we do this is we talk about the game that happened, and then we'll shift into the game that the Pac-12 team is playing. So that's kind of, we're not going to review all the games and then shift over to previews. We're going to kind of mix them up because it kind of keeps our focus on stats, and then we can move them to the next game. So again, Colorado 45, TCU 42. This was just a shootout. I am interested to see how good TCU is.
Yes.
Because there was some play calling, the questionable play calling by Art Briles' kid. Obviously, Colorado could move the ball at will throughout the entire game. We have Travis Hunter playing 7,000 snaps in this game, which was, and then dancing afterwards, which is like, holy. I mean, like, God put some people on this earth that are, I'm just like, I'm, you know, you just got to tip your hat to them and say, like, good for you, man. Like, that's amazing. And that's why we watch sports. We watch college football and pro football just to see people just perform at the highest level. And he certainly did. You know, what did you bring out of this here? We'll break down the stat sheet here, but what jumped out on your end?
So, I mean, I think the first thing that stood out was that and I say this, like, everyone should be excited. Like, I don't think we know exactly what TCU is going to be this season, but I don't think that they're going to be really bad. I mean, I think at worst for TCU this season, you're probably still looking at like a 7-win team, right? And so for Colorado, who was one of the worst teams we've ever measured in beta rank, to come out and go, I mean, Power 5 team, not, I mean, there have been some worse group of 5 teams.
The Bassholes, who are also having their renaissance.
Yeah, too. I mean, the Don Brown renaissance. But to go out there and go toe-to-toe with TCU, I mean, now look, I like when people say like the national runner-up, I'm like, they got housed, like rightfully housed by Georgia, right? Like that wasn't an accident. But like, I think what... I mean, like, and look, like Chandler Morris wasn't that sharp. You know, I think that they're strong. I mean, he had two interceptions.
And were they both in the red zone, if I recall? One, Travis Hunter was like a monster, but the both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, now in the Briles version of the, like, that Briles offense, like, they can run the ball. I mean, TCU ran the ball really well against Colorado. Like, that's probably my biggest, like, your biggest worry if you're Colorado is, like, Imani Bailey averaged 11.7 a carry, right? And TCU as a team averaged 7.1 per carry in the game, right? So, like, Morris was really, really rusty. I mean, he was nearly a 50% completion percentage, only 6.6 per. I don't think Colorado's pass defense is that good. I think that I think we're gonna figure some of these things out. Not against Nebraska. Nebraska's not gonna be that test of the pass defense. But I think if you're Colorado, if you have an offense that can come out and punch, right? Like, I do like TCU's defensive coordinator and Gillespie. I don't know that TCU's defense is going to be like, you know, in the top half of the Power 5 this year. But the fact that Colorado was able to come out and put up 45 on them, put up a bunch of big plays. Shedeur Sanders looked really good, you know, like terrific completion percentage, no interceptions, 10.9 per. That's fantastic.
He was bombing it and dropping it right in people. Like Travis Hunter, Sanders should have had another 50 yards and another touchdown on the day. Man, there's a couple big drops that happened. It didn't matter, but just credit to him where I get so excited about Washington's offense because you got Penix that's just slinging the ball around the field like a boss. And like was Shedeur Sanders Michael Penix? No. But he was aggressive, and that was what was super fun to watch.
I mean, this TCU defense only graded out at 26 overall in beta rank last season. So again, like my expectation is like, and they lost some dudes. Like my expectation is not that they're like a top 10 defense that Colorado just went out and waxed. Like they're probably going to finish in the 40s. Like, you know, like there's going to be a little bit of regression for them. But this is a great win. Like Colorado should feel fantastic, right? And they get a Nebraska team that's like, you know, like, man, this is going to be a contrast in styles. I watched some of that Nebraska Minnesota game.
I apologize. I apologize for you for on behalf of the Big Ten. That was a disaster.
It was a very Big Ten game. it was two teams doing their best Iowa impression. It was painful. But what Colorado is probably going to get, I would say, this season is they're probably going to get a better defense than they faced last week. Minnesota is not like a great offense, but Nebraska, Matt Rule's MO at Baylor was not offense, right? Like it was those defenses carried that team. I'm interested to see in this game, because you know, like we're going to get, you know, now did that reset? Oh no. So like Nebraska right now, I mean, they sit at 55 overall in beta rank. There's a ton of preseason weight in still. So like, you know, a little bit of, you know, keep it with a bit of a grain of salt here on that. Like Colorado's at 102. Colorado clearly is better than 102. There's just a lot of projection weight still in there. But I think that like this Nebraska team, like they're going to run the ball. Like they have a huge run pass split. Jeff Sims is their quarterback that came over from Georgia Tech. Like one of the things that was really interesting in that Nebraska game is they moved the ball a bit. They just did dumb things in the red zone, but Sims is dangerous. That guy is a big, fast human. That's going to be interesting to see, like a team that just gave up an average of what was it, like 7.7 yards per carry, now gets a quarterback that is like a much, much, much better runner than Chandler Morris.
Yeah. Jeff Sims, right. The transfer from Georgia Tech comes over. Yeah. Matt Rule, who the one, so we should just go off, right. The line is 3.
Yeah.
And it might've moved a little bit, right? I pulled these lines. We were recording a little later than normal, but like when I pulled it, it was 3. And that just jumped out at me. I mean, I get it, right? We don't want to overreact to week one, but I think a couple takeaways from my end on what Colorado is able to do. The first was Shedeur Sanders is a straight up power five quarterback. Like yeah. that guy is good.
Yep.
They got skill players all around, right? Edwards, the freshman, just lit it up. I loved how he's counting his touchdowns as he went into the end zone. Yeah. That was beautiful. Like I was talking with my son. We were watching it together. I'm like, that's 3, showing 3. Obviously Travis Hunter, obviously, some of the transfers from Florida, the Florida schools that came in. So they have the skill. The thing that jumped out for me is they can't defend the run. Like you mentioned, and they can't run the ball. And when you think of Nebraska, now you see why that line is 3, because Nebraska is going to run the ball. I think they're going to try to keep Jeff Sims contained, right?
He had
3 interceptions in that game against Minnesota. You're going to see a whole lot of running from Sims, to your point, and from the rest of that team. And I think you're going to see a front 7 that's going to challenge Sanders. And he was trying to get that ball out quick. And I know that the offensive coordinator that came over from I think it was Kent State, he was their head coach, was used to getting the ball out quick, right? Never had a good offensive line. That was kind of his MO there. So, I mean, 3 though, Rob, like this is a flawed Colorado team that will be fun and will put up points, and a Nebraska team with Matt Rule, who like almost everywhere he's gone, he's like, hey, I want you all to know year one's going to suck.
Right.
Like,
right.
He basically says it where he goes. So what do you think about the run matchups are really disadvantageous for Colorado, and 3 just, that's just low. I've waffled because that looks like a trap to me. I mean, right. Vegas has those giant towers based on lines like this, where the entire world is on Colorado, and their mother. Like there are so many people on Colorado that like the local bookie I use, like he doesn't even have the line right now. He's taking on so much risk on Colorado.
Right.
So, you know, what are we looking for in this matchup outside of the run game?
I mean, I really do feel like it's going to be, and look, like Minnesota can't throw the ball. Like their quarterback who has I did look up how to pronounce his name and I've already forgotten it.
It's, the Greek it's rifle. I know that.
Yes. Like the Kalliomakis. Yeah. I don't know. It could also be like some sticky honey dessert. I'm interested to see, because like Nebraska did a good job. I mean, I thought they did a really good job defensively. Like they made not that Minnesota is like the world's greatest offense, but they made them look bad. And like I said, like that's Rule's MO for sure. And I think that they're I think it's going to be interesting to see like what Colorado gets. Like if they're able to put up really big points. I mean, again, like I don't think Nebraska is going to be a top 25 defense. They might towards the end of the year. They're probably not right now, but they're probably a top 40 defense. And like if Colorado can come out and put up really big points again, you know, against them, like that's going to turn Colorado into like, you know, like Washington last year, right? Like a team that maybe has a really bad defense, you know, and maybe has a really good offense. That's a lot of fun. If you're a Colorado fan, you'll take that all day, right? Like if you're a Pac-12 fan, I mean, maybe not, because a lot of Pac-12 fans had basically penciled in a win versus Colorado on the schedule.
Yep.
like there's some very, like very bad news flash of like, oh man, Stanford is like, it looks a little ahead of, I don't know how far ahead of schedule Stanford looks, but like a little ahead of schedule. Colorado might be a lot ahead of schedule.
Yeah. What? I guess my one question in terms of the statistics here is, what was Nebraska's pass defense last year? And I know there's some turnover, right? New coach, but you know, some of the talent is still there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they're recruiting. What do we got here in that pass defense?
Well, they really, I mean, I will say too, is like they really struggled a little bit last year defensively. They fell off, but they were still at 43 overall in effective pass versus 82 in effective rush. They did a good job. Like now, right now they're sitting at 39 overall in beta rank. Now I am pulling in some data from last year to leaven out these numbers and make sure that they're less wonky. What they did a really good job of so far is containing big plays. They don't have a big run pass split right now. Colorado does. Colorado is throw the ball a lot, right? Like Sanders was on. I mean, that's like, it's going to be interesting because like, even if Nebraska, like they're going to make mistakes, they're not going to be probably as good as they will be later on, you know, this season with once rules, you know, got them playing the kind of defense he wants, but they're going to largely be well coached. I mean, I think Matt Rule's a really, really good defensive mind. I'm just like, I think this gives us another point. Like I'm one of those ones of like, I don't like, if you want me to say, like, I am happy to stand here and say, like, Colorado's probably a top 60 football team coming into this, like, after what we saw with TCU. That's amazing. That's amazing. I still don't know if they're better than 50 or 40 or what. Like, that's an open question still. That's the part where I'm like, yeah, we still got to figure that part out.
Yeah. I'm going to. So I went 3-5. You went 5-3 on the week. So we're still working through the off season, or at least I am, the cobwebs and stuff. I want to take Colorado. Everything that I'm looking at says to take Colorado, but laying a 3 and sitting on it, boy, howdy, that makes me worried. I'm going to take Nebraska. I think that the run defense and their run offense is going to equalize this game. Yeah. I think it's going to drag Colorado down into the muck. It's going to be slower than they want to do. And this Colorado team is still putting things together. I would love to see, you know, another win from Colorado on this, and they certainly can, but I just, like you mentioned, Matt Rule isn't an idiot. Like, you know, he's got some of this stuff on tape now. He understands what he's up against. This is a defense that should be decent. And if Nebraska isn't dumb and runs the football, I think that this is going to be a game that is the exact opposite of what we just saw in Fort Worth. So give me Colorado, or I'm sorry, give me Nebraska. I'll take the 3 points, and I'm not going to bet this. This is just for the podcast. I'm going to watch this with like pure unbridled joy in terms of what I'm going to see. But what do you got here, Rob?
I mean, with the 3 points, I'm, God, it sounds crazy. I'm going to take Colorado. I mean, I think Rule is close, but not like it, well. No, I'm not. I think Sims is going to run for like 200 yards. I think this is a close game. I think I actually going to take Nebraska because I think Nebraska's defense will be better than Colorado's in this game, and I think that Colorado's defense is going to get exploited by Sims in a way that maybe TCU couldn't. I mean, because they're not. I mean, Nebraska is not going to if Nebraska throws the ball 40 times in this game, things have gone very bad, right? Like, and Nebraska has we should also say like Nebraska has the capability now with the new clock rules and the way they can run the football to kill some clock in this game. right? Like they can cut down the number of overall drives too in a way that maybe they couldn't in the past. And like I'm with you actually. Come to think of it, I've talked myself into Nebraska.
I'm going to take the under if anybody actually pops that line back up, because I just I don't think that. I think a lot of people are jumping on the high flying offense and they don't understand like a lot of the public is going to just take that over intrinsically. And I think that I'd like to see what that number is, because I would likely actually jump on that one. That line and this upcoming line, you know, Utah is a 7.5 point favorite over Baylor on the road at Baylor. Both of these lines are going to be either the, wow, that was the dumbest line of all time, or yep, that's why there is gambling and there are companies that make profit off of it, because both of these are lines that you kind of take a look at and you just cock your head to the side and go, huh, I'm wondering about that, because Utah 24, Florida 11. We mentioned on this show that obviously most people knew that Cam Rising was going to be out, but one of the things that we highlighted was it was likely that Brent Keithy was out, and he was also. So Utah straight up won this game without their starting quarterback and starting tight end, which is bonkers. And
a couple defensive line starters.
It's incredible. I mean, look, we've said this on the show. Andy Ludwig is a good offensive coordinator. I know that Cam Rising, I know he's had good quarterbacks, but he's used them well and he's done interesting things. And this is exhibits like X on, right, on what he's able to do.
This, Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Just kind of looking into the box score here. I mean, it was fascinating to see what they did, right? They did the dual quarterbacks, which was brilliant, right? You had Barnes, who just freaking gunned it down 70 yards to open the game. Hell yeah. Oh man, I was so excited about that. And then Nate Johnson using his legs and moving around. That's all they needed to do. And like you mentioned, even without some players on the defensive side, they're playing Graham Mertz. And I still, right, like I on the show, like for me, I said, oh, I'll take Florida if Rising and Keithy are out, and they were. So I lost this, but it's a testament to what Utah has been able to put together. I mean, Micah Bernard had a pretty decent day. Not an explosion of offense, but I think they played a pretty good Florida defense, Rob.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I'm interested to see where, I mean, we talk about like, hey, where is everybody going to sort of shake out here? I think that one of the things that was a real deciding factor in this game is like, and if you followed Billy Napier's Louisiana teams and like his Florida team last season, I mean, his offense is, he likes to run the football first. He employs two offensive line coaches on his staff. So they really emphasize running the football, and they ran into, it does appear that like last season, Utah's run defense is a buzzsaw. And I mean, that put Florida in the position where Billy Napier's appears to be pretty uncomfortable having to call a game where he has to throw the ball to compete. Like last season, what torched Utah was, I mean, Richardson, I think, is a better quarterback, but Richardson could also run, right? Like, and the mobile quarterback really hurt Utah last year. This season, not so much. And I think that if you're a Utah fan, like, the really good here is like, even without your starters, the run defense was fantastic, right? Like, and I thought that Utah's offense, like, again, like without Keithy and without Rising, like that's a huge limiting factor. The fact that they were still able to move the ball around and put up some points was a major thing for them, I think. And like Ludwig, like we talked about, like Ludwig's going to be fine. They also get, I mean, like they're going to get a Baylor team that's quite a bit depleted and just absolutely tripped right out the door this season. But I would have like the, I know this is going to sound like I'm like peeing in the punch bowl here, but like Mert still threw for 300 yards in an offense that wasn't all that friendly to him and the quarterback position. Like I mean, like we talked about coming into the year, Utah's pass defense has to get better. And while, yeah, they made Graham Mertz and Billy Napier look foolish with no running game, I don't know. Like, I didn't see anything in this game that was like, oh, man, like, that's going to be better for them. And I don't know that we're going to get it tested for them till we really get in the conference play, which is, I mean, good for Utah, right? Like, I mean, you maybe have a chance to, like, break some guys in and try to improve it. But, yeah, I mean, like, and it's a, I think the one bummer is like, we're not really going to get to see. And like Rising does seem to be cleared enough to like be participating in practice, I think, to some level. So I expect him to come back pretty sharp when they let him in to play. But I'm less convinced on this past defense so far, but anyway, Rising should come in and he should be ready to go. I think the running game is going to be fine. That was impressive too, because like Utah came out and they were able to run the ball all right, but I think it's hard when they don't have Rising and Keithy there to like take some of the pressure off.
Yeah. I'm looking at this line, all right. It's actually popped up to 8.5 now. Okay. And So Baylor, right, lost to Texas State at home, 42-31. Yeah. They could not run the ball against Texas State. That's a problem, right? Like on 32 carries, let's take out sacks. On 28 carries, they had like 100 yards against Texas State. Problem, massive problem. But Blake Shapen was able to throw the ball around their quarterback. And yeah,
he's out.
Oh, is he out?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Because I was about to take Baylor.
Well, I'm glad I told you and just didn't let you.
Oh, no. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll take Utah. The thing that worries me is, right, Nate Johnson and Bryson Barnes, like Barnes on the road. I mean, you say what you want, like Baylor dropped one. But this team's still like, this is still a Power Five team that has a decent defensive coach. But without a quarterback, holy smokes. Like, right? Because you can have a quarterback throwing all over Utah and then it's a problem. And that was their weakness on the defensive side. But if they don't have a quarterback, I'll take the 8.5. I'll lay him. I'll take Baylor.
Give me the Utes. Right now it's at Utah at 11 in beta rank. Baylor's at 57. And the naive spread is it almost 10 points. So yeah, definitely give me Utah here.
Man, I would have really liked to see a quarterback sling it around and see how Utah reacts, right? Because obviously they have a good defensive coordinator too, and historically a good secondary. I think it's a little shaky this year though. We'll see.
Yeah.
Right. If Baylor moves the ball in this game through the air, that's a problem, Utah fans. So let's keep an eye on that. All right, next game, Arizona State 24, Southern Utah 21. Look, this is an FCS team. We don't spend a lot of time on this, but Arizona State has a big game coming up against Oklahoma State at home. Couple items here. You know, Jaden Rashada, 18 for 31, 236 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, but pretty inconsistent in the way that he was throwing the ball around. ASU did what it does, which is rush the football fairly well. Cam Scatabo over from Sacramento State, it was the rushing guy there. Xavier Gilroy, Jalen Conyers were the top pass catchers. Look, this game was way closer. I don't know how much I'm going to put into it because of the massive break in between the game. And so like a lot of Southern Utah's points came in the second half. One of them was on a scoop and score. But also like one of the things to keep in mind was ASU, there was an 81-yard punt return that set them up for a score. Southern Utah had a touchdown called back for targeting. They ended up scoring anyway, but like 9 penalties for 100 yards for ASU. Like this, I think this team sucks. Like I do. I'll give them a little bit of a pass here, but like they're going to run into an Oklahoma State team that's kind of trying to put things together too. But I was not impressed. It's a wonky game, but not impressed with the results.
No, and it's tough too, because like Oklahoma State went out and did not play well against their own FCS opponent, the Central Arkansas Bears.
Scottie Pippen's alma mater, Conway, Arkansas. Let's go.
I mean, they gave up 391 yards. They were only up by 6. They were only up by 6 points heading into the fourth quarter. They gave up 4.4 yards per carry to Central Arkansas. And they only averaged 6.3 yards per pass. against Central Arkansas in this game. Now they, you know, they did eat, like, it was even on turnovers. They only won 27-13. I think Oklahoma State still has better talent than ASU does in this game. But it, like, when I was like, oh, what did Oklahoma State do? I was like, oh, that's not good. I mean, it looked like ASU had some positives, you know, like Rashada was pretty good. The completion percentage obviously needs to improve. ASU ran the ball all right. You'd like to see them be able to run the ball a lot better in this game, but it does feel fairly close. Beterank has this at about 4 points for Oklahoma State. I'm going with the Cowboys in this game. You know, I just think that they, like, for two teams that struggled out of the gate, I think Oklahoma State's got more experience on the coaching staff and more experience of the players.
Yeah, that was my angle too, where if it's a close game, I'm going to give it to the coach that's been doing this for like two decades extremely successfully versus like new coach, new team. One of the things to keep in mind is, I like you mentioned, Rob, I don't think this is a gimme. I don't think Oklahoma State comes in and blows out ASU. I don't think ASU is good, but I don't think Oklahoma State is all that good. One thing to really to like look at is, I think Rashada throws some picks, and I think even though this Oklahoma State team was stripped of a lot of players, like that's the one thing to keep in mind. They got portaled, like people stripped and portaled and graduation. This is kind of a new team also, but I just trust that coaching staff a little bit more. I will lay the 3.5. I'm not super excited about it. This is a good barometer for ASU though. Like if they beat, this will be a well-coached bad team. Right. And if they're able to knock that, I think that clears that first hurdle of what your expectations are for ASU.
I think that's about right. I mean, like, if you're ASU, you'd like to see this game close. Like, both of these teams are stumbling around. This feels like Oklahoma State feels like they might be in the market for a new offensive coordinator at the end of this season. You know, we'll see where they shake out on the defensive side. They've got a new DC in place because Derek Mason decided to retire. But if you're ASU, like, I mean, Oklahoma State's probably somewhere on like the bottom third of the Big 12, like, but not at the absolute bottom, like kind of like, you know, maybe in that, maybe like somewhere in between like tier three and tier two, this season. Like if you're ASU, you were horrible last year. If you can hang with Oklahoma State, that probably puts you as like in the 60s as a bad Power Five team. That's improvement. And you should be excited for Kenny Dillingham's first year if that's where you are.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our next round of games, and let's do it right after this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're talking UCLA, 27, Coastal Carolina, 13. We said it on the show, and I'm such an idiot, Rob. I basically was like, yeah, Chip Kelly doesn't care about, you know, non-conference games, but I'm going to take him anyway, laying 13.5 or whatever it was against, I think it was 14.5 against Coastal Carolina. And of course, right, like, and I knew this. He comes out, he says, I'm going to start three quarterbacks. I should immediately go like, that's when the alarms go off in your head. And you remember, like, this man does not care. This man is trying to figure things out in the first three games. He's like the Dana Altman of college football coaches in the Pac-12. Like, he just does not care at the beginning of the season.
Dana Altman actually recruits.
That's true. Dana Altman recruits like a madman. Look, we tried the Ethan Garber show. And that looks like it's over. Looks like we're Dante Moore all day, every day.
Unless you're in Chip Kelly's press conferences. He keeps saying it's not over.
It's over. I mean, like, look, if Garbers can't move the ball and is throwing two picks against Coastal Carolina, like, good luck against San Diego State, because that's going to be a well-coached defense.
Right.
Um, I think we'll see. Like, you know, and it wasn't like Moore had a great day. He was almost 50% completion, 2 touchdowns, a pick. I mean, UCLA was able to rush the ball 153 yards on the ground against Coastal. But I think the thing to keep in mind is I thought that Grayson McCall was going to be running around a little bit more. And I mean, he put up 270 yards on UCLA's secondary.
Yeah.
I guess the question in this game is, like, is San Diego State going to score points? I mean, I don't trust this defense at all from UCLA, but I don't trust the offense either.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tough one. You're 100% right in that, like, do I want to rely on, and San Diego State for a hot minute looked like they were actually putting it together last season, like to at the very end of last year, putting it together a little bit on offense. Now they did beat Ohio in a game where like they knocked out Ohio's starting quarterback. That really hurt. But they didn't have,
yeah,
I mean, in their one game against FBS competition, they didn't have a really good offensive game. They only put up 318 yards. They were only getting 5.9 per pass. Now they did get 5 per carry on 31 rush attempts. You know, but like Ohio, you know, if Ohio's starting quarterback is in that game, Ohio wins that game. They turned the ball over 3 times and then had their backup in there. I don't have any faith in San Diego State because like UCLA's got a decent front seven. We talked about this, right? Like, and I think that works. Like the way to torch UCLA is in the air because that secondary ain't it. But I'm not convinced that's San Diego State, you know, like in McCall, like, you know, that Coastal Carolina offense was like an interesting take on like a very modern option football at times. Right. And now of course, like Jamie Chadwell's off to Liberty. Grayson McCall is like hanging out with the new coaching staff. Like, I'm not sure McCall, like, I mean, McCall's a fun college quarterback. I'm not sure that he fits into the new Coastal offense in the way, like, and I'm not sure they're gonna like be able to line up and throw the ball all year anyway. So I like UCLA in this game, but like I gotta go back and look. What's the by 13 and a half. Ooh. I mean, like Betarank's got it at 17. I don't think SDSU can like kill a ton of clock running the football against UCLA. Oh, it feels hard though, because like Dante Moore could throw a pick against this. I mean, he could throw 2 picks against the San Diego State defense, right? Like, they're pretty good.
Yep.
Like, for
it actually moved up to 14 and a half. So I'll give you that if you want it.
Ooh.
It opened at 13. It popped up a point.
You know, Chip Kelly's going to play guard. You know, he's going to play the Kent State transfer too.
Gotta give Schley some love here.
Like, you know,
especially when you see,
you know, that's gonna happen in this dumb game, right? Like Dante Moore is gonna get like, you know, like 50% of the snaps. Either that or Kelly's being coy. That guy never answers a question straight. So I'm taking San Diego State. I just think this game could be like stupid, dumb, and low scoring, and like UCLA just pulls it out. But I mean, I expect him to win by 10. I think that probably feels more right.
The question here is, how many points do you think San Diego State is going to score? Right?
I think, like, they're going to score 13 points.
Yeah. I think the UCLA defense is a little better than it was last year.
Yeah.
If they get to 17, I think that's still, because the defense is going to be good.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, with a good defense, I'll take the points too. It did pop to 14 and a half. Let's run with that. The under is interesting. It's 48 and a half, which is right. The average under is about 54 for a college game, but that might be the play. Just because I don't think there's going to be a ton of points scored from San Diego State. And I think UCLA is going to have to earn it. So,
we know they like to run the football. I think that's what's going to be hard, is like, I don't think they're going to be able to run the football really well in this game. Because I think I think they're going to have to throw it. And I think San Diego State can put pressure.
Yeah. Keep an eye on that. I mean, it's an interesting, it's like a interesting matchup for UCLA. If UCLA can just shut the door on San Diego State, the problem is, like, I'm not going to be super impressed. Good for you. But if they allow 21 points, then it would be like, holy smokes. Like, they got to do something because the defense is still bad. Yeah. So let's go to the next game here. So Washington State just rolled and smoked Colorado State. You called this, Rob. I thought CSU was going to be better under Jay Norvell. I thought that they were going to put in a little bit more of a team together, and that wasn't the case. Washington State, Cam Ward looked pretty good. 37-49.
He got going. He was shaky early, but he got going.
Yeah. Yeah. In the beginning, I was like, oh no, but you're right. He really did kind of step it on a little bit. But, like, I mean, when if you're a Washington State fan and you take a look at that box score and you see Cam Ward be able to throw it, I think he threw it over a terrible defense. So let's just call a spade here. Like, when Lincoln Victor has 168 yards, I don't think these wide receivers are particularly good for Washington State, which leads me to think that Colorado State was just kind of a mess. But they dropped a 50 burger. They were able to keep this game for the most part out of reach. I know it was a slow start.
Yeah.
But one of the things that worries me, Rob, is they gave up 320 yards through the air. That's a problem.
Yeah.
To Colorado State. What do you think?
I mean, I like the thing to watch out for if you're Washington State is their Wisconsin and their OC is Phil Longo, and everybody thinks of Phil Longo and thinks of the air raid, you know, and he came up as an air raid guy. A lot of his North Carolina, some of his North Carolina teams, even with Drake May, they ran the ball really, really well. And they, now they were against Buffalo, but they ran it for 314 last week in that game. And they averaged 7.9 per carry. They didn't ask a lot from Tanner Mordecai in that game. He threw two picks anyway. You know, but like the defense, the defense, they've got, I want to say Luke Fickell has like Jim Tressel's kid is his DC. Like you know from those Cincinnati teams, like, you know, like the defense should be all right for Wisconsin, right? Like I think that like they're going to be a lot more disciplined. Like last year's team just sort of kind of fell apart. But they did a pretty good job, you know, against Buffalo's offense, you know, really holding their quarterback in check. You know, Buffalo only put up 17 points in that game. I mean, I think that's my main concern coming into this, with Wazoo, because, you know, like as I recall last season, and I'm going to look right now, they were a little better against, they were at 30 in effective pass, 40 in effective rush. My concern here is that Wisconsin's going to come in and really be able to run the ball pretty well in this game. And I like Dickert. I like his defense. I think Washington State has, like, this should be a really fun game. I think Arbuckle showed out with Cam Ward in against Colorado State. Yeah, they were really bad, but like Cam Ward managed to look bad against bad last year. So just to be able to show up and to like complete the assignment was a huge win. I think if you're a Washington State fan, but should make it really fun. I do think Wisconsin's going to be like, I think Wisconsin, unlike last year where Wisconsin was running like the dumbest, that game was so dumb on Wisconsin's offense. I don't think that's the case this season. Like I think they can move the ball. I think they're going to run the ball really well. And if Mordecai doesn't make mistakes, like it's going to narrow the window for Washington State to get through.
My worry is that I think this game is close. I don't think Wisconsin comes in and blows out Washington State.
Yeah.
I think Washington State has a chance to win the game, but man, 6.5, like with a Wisconsin offense that's putting itself together. I guess my question is, what was the defense last year? You know, where were they on the run pass splits?
Oh, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
So Wisconsin was 18 in effective rush, 40 in effective pass. They did struggle a little bit defending the pass last season. There's a new DC in town, you know, and Fickell's a defensive minded coach himself. So I expect that to improve, but I do think this Washington, like, I think what we saw is, you know, like, and we'll find out, because like Wisconsin, I don't think their defense is going to be bad this year. I think their defense is going to be in the top 25. So this is going to tell us a lot about where Arbuckle and Cam Ward are. Like, they're going to need to be able to move the ball and put up points here. If they're going to take the step forward that they need to take, I think that they're going to be, you know, like, you know, that they're going to have to show up here. And they're gonna have to match. I mean, it could be a little bit of, like, they might end up in a shootout with the Wisconsin run game.
I cannot bet on Cam Ward and these wide receivers. I can't do it, Rob. I'm gonna take Wisconsin.
There's two quarterbacks that, like, you could not, like, it's like, do, like, your choice is like, do I gamble on Tanner Mordecai, who just threw two picks against Buffalo in a game where the running game was rolling? Or do I put money on Cam Ward, who we have seen in person? Like,
I can't.
Yeah,
I can't do it.
I'm going to take Wisconsin here. I think the running game, like, I have a lot of faith in, like, Longo's execution of a really interesting run game behind what I think was still a pretty good Wisconsin offensive line and some good running back talent. And I don't think, if Tanner Mordecai avoids picks, then I think they should be fine.
Yeah, if you're this is not dumping on Washington State. Like, I think Washington State is better than it was last year on the offensive side. I think that's just I just don't know if this is the team to you know,
it's
be able to pull away.
It's tough because BetaRank has this as closer. Like, BetaRank has this as about 2 on the naive spread. But BetaRank's a little lower on Wisconsin after the off year that they had last season than I think. Like, I think they're probably I think the model's probably underrating Wisconsin a little bit right now.
Okay. Next game. All right. Well, let's do this, because it was beautiful. I was able to watch most of these games. I didn't get an eye on a lot of the FCS games, although I saw a couple of them. I just had a ball watching Washington State throw the ball every possible corner of this football field. Michael Penix, 29 of 40, 5 touchdowns. Roma Duse, like Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan, almost all three of them got almost all three of them got 100 yards each. McMillan was 5 yards short, but he got like 19 yards on the ground. This was a delight. It was just really fun watching Washington be able to load up. The one thing that was interesting here, they won 56-19 against Boise State. The thing that jumped out for me in this game, though, was Boise State left a number of points on the field.
Yeah.
Like, that quarterback is not good.
No.
And he missed multiple open players, like, in stride that would have been points. I mean, Washington would have still won this game, but this game should have been closer. It should have been, like, 56-30, which isn't saying too much, but... I just wanted to flag that, because I still don't know if this defense is great. They gave up 264 yards through the air, but it could have been better. They gave up 138 rushing, which isn't terrible, but I mean, this is USC, but like with a likable coach and you know, like a more like, you know, a staff that isn't as pretentious. I just love this Washington team.
No, this Washington team, I mean, like, they're going to pick up exactly where they left off on offense, it appears. And, like, they should have a time of it. Like, Tulsa's a decent Group of Five team. They finished at 74 overall in BetaRank last year. 72 on defense. They were a little bit, I mean, they actually had a pretty big run pass, but they were 39 in effective pass versus 106 in effective rush. But I don't think being 39 in effective pass is going to help you all that much against Washington. They had a decent Group of Five offense, 74 overall. I mean, I think it is what we talked. I mean, like what we talked about with Washington coming in. Like, I don't think that this team is going to really test Washington here. You know, like Washington is like Washington should roll against Tulsa. Now, Tulsa had a pretty good game against Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Yeah, the Bluffs.
But it was you know, like Washington is going to be a. Oh, geez. I'm still recovering from all the smoke in Glacier National Park. I just don't expect this to be the game. I think Washington covers. Like, you know, it seems like a lot of points.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of points.
It is.
Right? It is at home.
With a hook.
Right? You know, like, I mean, I guess the only question is, like, does Washington take off the foot off? Like, do they take the foot off the gas? Like, when do the subs come in? Like, because, like, with Boise, I mean, it almost felt it almost felt personal, right?
Yeah.
Like, it almost felt, it almost, like, I was like, why is Penix still in here? Like, Boise is not doing a thing. I mean, like, I guess you just want to get him some, like, game reps, like, but, like, what is he doing in this game? Like, go sit down, man.
Well, that it, particularly because they couldn't get it going on the ground.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they lose Cam Davis, right? Cam Davis.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's so many names. It was interesting to me because DeBoer made that seem like it was devastating. And I'm looking at the offense going like, you guys run the ball like once every four times. Like, this isn't that big. But maybe it's pass blocking or I don't quite know. Yeah. But when you take a look at the box score, like, they had a lot of guys run the ball, but not often and not successfully. Yeah. So you would assume that they would just be running the ball just to kind of get those guys some reps and just figure that out. They didn't do that. My worry, Rob, is I am not sold on this defense. I still am right. I'm curious, what was Tulsa's offense last year and what were they? You said 74, but, you know, that's a pretty decent, offense.
Group of five offense. They were at 81 in effective rush, 60 in effective pass. So, like, I mean, what you'd like to have coming in to face Washington, right, is you'd like to have somebody that's, you know, like, even if you're at 74, they've got a huge run pass split and they just throw the ball all over the place, right? Like, but you don't have that, unfortunately, for the Tulsa Golden Hurricane. And really, like, Boise last season offensively, they were at 68. They were at 87 in effective pass. Like, and it kind of showed, I felt like, in the game. Like, Boise was not a good. They really just were not. Like, Boise finished ahead of where Tulsa finished last year in beta rank. You're not wrong, though. I mean, I think you can still put up points, you know, and, you know, maybe Tulsa doesn't make this glaring mistakes that Boise State made. And maybe Penix isn't in the game as long. And so maybe it's not, you know, like, cause they got, I mean, they got a 35, I mean, they got a, you know, a 37 point win against Boise at home. They're going to cook Tulsa. It's just the by how much.
Yeah. I mean, there were some players wide TF open like that. We're just you go, oh man.
And, the pass rush was not great.
Yeah. I'll take the points. I think they're going to drop another 50 to 60 burger on this team, but I just think that they're going to give it 34 and a half is a lot.
Yeah.
The thing that worries me is it looks like Tulsa's breaking in a new quarterback. So I'm just double checking here. Yeah. So, I mean, you're kind of betting on a quarterback that hasn't really seen the field outside of Arkansas Pine Bluff, like, in college, period. So keep an eye on that, but I'll take the points. I will be glad if Washington proves me wrong, because that means that they're just, that means the defense might have taken a step forward and they're willing to go. And then, oh, how about you, Rob? What are you doing?
I'll take Washington. Okay. We got to disagree at some point.
Yeah, I know. We've
been on the same page right same here. And I'm like, right here. Now we need to.
All right. Last back half of the Pac-12 games. Let's get to them right after this. All right, we're back. Let's get this over with. Oregon 81, Portland State 7. Who cares? Like, I'm sorry. Like, so Rob, one of the things that you mentioned on the podcast last week was, Portland State just being a really terrible pass defense and defense in general. And lo and behold, like, even Ty Thompson was 7 for 8 with a touchdown. Right. So I think that kind of highlights roundabouts what the level of play was. I think Oregon's trying to make a statement, right? They're trying to get Bo Nix the Heisman. They're putting all those banners up in, like, New York City and Dallas and all that stuff. I don't know. Anything you want to say about this? This is ridiculous. And I guess one more thing. There was a point in my life where I looked at the box score. It was like midnight and it was like Arizona 70, Idaho 0. And I'm just going, we're back, man. The Desert Swarm is back. This team is going to be awesome. And Arizona won like 5 games that year.
Yeah.
Opponent matters. I mean, obviously Oregon's significantly better than Arizona. This is a team that could make the playoff, but, anything to say about this performance against the Vikings?
No, I mean, it was, they absolutely crushed them. I don't know. Like, don't watch bad football. I mean, if you're an Oregon fan, I'm sure it was fun, but like there are literally zero lessons to take away from this game.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's fascinating their matchup coming up though, right? Because they're a 7-point favorite on the road against Texas Tech. Going to Lubbock is like going to the moon.
I've been to Lubbock. That's the moon. They're gonna throw tortillas at you.
You're gonna have good food, I think, while you're there. We'll see. I've been to many parts of Texas. I have not been to Lubbock. How's the food there, Rob?
I don't have much kind to say. Like, don't go to Lubbock. That's the best advice I can give anyone. Like, if you end up in Lubbock, like you don't end up in Lubbock without intending to get there. There's no, it's not a stop on the way to anywhere.
No.
And
it is the giraffe neck in Texas, yeah. Almost like you got to go way up north.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had a really good time in Lubbock, but it was because of, I was still drinking at the time and I was like 23 or no, I was like 21.
Well, you can have a good time anywhere with enough booze and being young and dumb. And
there were a lot of co-eds around. It was a good time had by all. But they do get a Texas Tech team that like went up to Laramie and got beat, you know, like in a team that looked like they were improving. I mean, certainly not looked like they were improved last season over what they had been under McGuire. Like I like the offensive coordinator at Texas Tech. You know, they just kind of like they Texas Tech rushed out to a 17-0 lead against Wyoming. And then only scored 3 more points in the rest of regulation, and Wyoming just kind of chipped away, over the rest of the game, to get it tied up and sent into overtime, and then, you know, managed to pull it out in overtime. Now Texas Tech outgained Wyoming. Tyler Shuck had a decent game, not a great game, but Wyoming has, a traditionally under Craig Bohl, a pretty good group of 5 defense. They often really struggle offensively. Now Wyoming ran the ball, when you take out the sacks and everything, like ran the ball pretty well. Peasley in particular, Wyoming's quarterback, really hurt him with his legs, and that was part of the problem. But yeah, Texas Tech, I mean, like after running out to all those points, like Texas Tech just like kept stumbling and wasn't able to put up points really over a lot of the back half. They were improved last year on defense in particular with Tim DeRuiter as the defensive coordinator.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
didn't work out for him at Oregon, but he did improve that Texas Tech defense. And last year offensively, they finished at 34 overall in beta rank. And they throw the ball, and Oregon struggled to defend the pass last year. That's right. Like, this is going to be the first game. Like, I think Oregon's the better team. You know, but the question is like, by how much? And they're on the road. Knicks can certainly run the ball as well as Peasley. He's really mobile, and he's certainly shown that he can, you know, throw the ball around, you know, as well. You know, we're going to get to see that. But I think this Texas Tech offense is gonna have a better game than they had last week. I mean, I'm not saying Wyoming's going to end up with a better defense than Oregon. I'm just saying, like, they did some dumb stuff last week, and they probably should have a little bit of that out of their system.
When I think of Oregon, I always think of the offense first, right? I mean, the defense was a problem last year, but like you mentioned, they were the least problematic defense of the problematic defenses,
yeah,
you know, in the Pac-12 among, you know, at the higher echelon of the conference.
Right.
I mean, this is the test. Can they actually put things together? Is Dan Lanning, you know, was he along for the ride, or is he calling the plays and actually, you know, had the hand in what Kirby Smart was doing? I think they're going to put up points. I'm not as worried about that. What were the splits for Texas Tech last year? Because this is more of the teams we've talked about. This is more of a cohesive unit than we had in than some of these other teams, yeah, that have brought in transfers.
And people do like, I mean, I think Joey McGuire is a really interesting, good coach. So Texas Tech was 31 on defense last season. They have no big run pass split, 31 in effective rush, 34 in effective pass. The one thing to keep an eye on is Oregon was almost all explosive last year. They're number 5 overall in explosive drives on offense versus 30 on drive efficiency. That is flipped for Texas Tech. They were number 1 overall in drive efficiency on defense last season. They used the field to their advantage, found ways to get off the field, but they were 56 in giving up explosive plays. That's not where you want to be when you're going to face Oregon, right? Who relies on big play. Now, it's going to be interesting. Oregon's got a new OC. We'll see how that plays out. I still expect them to be fairly explosive, so they should be able to get some points in this game. But you flip it around, and offensively, Texas Tech was at 34 last year. They were at 22 in effective pass versus 56 in effective rush. They were very efficient last season, 8 overall in drive efficiency. So when they did put up points, it was usually from putting together long drives. Oregon's defense was at 45 overall. They were at 71 in effective pass versus 27 in effective rush. That's my concern in this game. Is like, I mean, it's on the road. You know, and to be frank, too, like, it's not like DeRuiter doesn't know some of the guys, you know, like, doesn't know all of them. But like, I mean, he's going to be somewhat familiar. I struggle with this one. Betteranks got it by Oregon on the road at about 4.2. I don't know. Part of me is like, oh, no, Oregon's going to put up a couple of really big plays in this game. But I also think Texas Tech will, too.
Yeah. All right. I initially had Texas Tech. The couple things worry me here. The thing in favor of Oregon is I don't think Lanning steps off the gas if they win. I think if they're up by 3, they go for the touchdown in the fourth quarter because he's trying to get Nix the Heisman. Yeah. So keep that in mind. This is a team that is not going to give a quarter. And I think that they're trying to make a statement as they go into the Big Ten. Yeah. So that's the worry here. At the same time, trusting Oregon's defense on the road is like has not been a great proposition,
right?
And I didn't realize Texas Tech was as good on offense as they were in the numbers. So,
and I mean, like, it's like the Tyler Shuck. I mean, like, here's the fun one is like, I would, having watched the Tyler Shuck experience for a couple of years now, I would not want to put money on Tyler Shuck.
Yeah,
but is he motivated for a revenge game? I don't know. I mean, because he did have, as did Donovan. I mean, like, all the Texas Tech quarter, they had horrible injury luck at quarterback last year. All of them had decent games last year at stretches, and then they also had stretches of doing impossibly stupid things. I'm going to take Oregon just because I think they're going to. I think the big plays are there. But I think if you're an Oregon fan, I think you might be disappointed with how your defense plays in this game.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Is a really good number for this game, unfortunately.
Because you want to take the 7. You're like, Oregon's going to put up the points. But like, it's hard. It's hard to play on the road. Just period. Yeah. End of story. Now they got to play against a team that's pretty good that just got punched in the face by Wyoming. And
it's Lubbock, the line didn't move. I mean, like, that stadium is going to be loud and nuts, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, like, Texas Tech is in the middle of nowhere. That also tells you there ain't nothing else to do but go to the game. Like, it's a dry county. It's right. A dry county. You got, now, Texas counties are tiny. So you got to drive outside the county line to get liquor, you know, like, I mean, so it is, it, you know, there's, they're gonna party all day and go to the game, and it's gonna be loud and crazy, and they do throw tortillas.
All right, give me Tech. I think Oregon wins, but I think this is closer than I had anticipated. Next game in conference, USC. So, like, USC beat the tar out of Nevada. Look, Williams did whatever he wanted. And the wide receivers are good, but they gave up 14 points to Nevada. And like, one of those was just a ridiculous, like, this defense is not good. This USC defense is not fixed. You know, they made this big deal about, like, I forget the guy's name, but a true freshman, you know, linebacker, he's got the number, he's out there and he's starting. And then he gets called for targeting and costs basically a touchdown for USC on a stop. Like, there's just a, like, Eric Gentry, like people are waited bated breath. Is Eric Gentry going to be in this game? That's not a good sign, right? Is Shane Lee going to be Stanford's a 29.5 point favorite or a dog on the road against Stanford. And I thought what they did to Hawaii was interesting. Yeah. Like clearly this offense is a little better than look, Hawaii, I don't think is very good. So let's, you know, call a spade here. And they gave up 24 points to Hawaii. So that's a problem. Yeah. But I don't know. What do you think about this matchup, Rob?
I mean, look, the real problem, Hawaii didn't try to run the ball very much. So it was Stanford's pass defense is a problem going against USC, right? Because Hawaii, yes.
Oh Lord Almighty, Hawaii,
you know, like it's not like Shager had, you know, he only had 6.7 per, but he had 355 yards on 3 TDs and no picks, right? So like, yeah, Stanford's defense is a problem. I thought Stanford ran the ball all right. Did EJ Smith get hurt in this game?
That was what was weird. So I watched about half of it and he was in the game. I didn't see him on the injury report, but yeah, 4 carries for 14 yards and a touchdown. That was weird. That was weird to me. I'm wondering if he's still not feeling great.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, like I think Troy Taylor's offense, like, I think they're going to be able to get it going a little bit more here. Like, I think Eurosec's going to be a big problem for USC.
Yes. Yes, he is.
And that's like, I think this is too many points. Like, I think USC's defense is still has not proved to me that they're not dumb bad at what they're doing. And there's some real positives. Like, I mean, I thought Jeff Schwartz did a good job of pointing out that, like, listen, like it, this stuff doesn't show up in the box score yet, but like Bear Alexander had a couple really good plays so far this year. Like, that stuff, like I said, it's not showing up in the box score yet. Nevada is a mess. Like that program is like really needs to decide whether it wants to be at FBS level. But Stanford's going to be a much bigger challenge. They've got than they've had from San Jose State, who at times looked competent on offense against them, you know? And I do think Taylor's I am 100% sure Troy Taylor had things he did not pull out of the box against Hawaii because he didn't need to, that he's going to pull out of the box against USC. Right. It just feels like a lot of points. And I think Taylor's still a pretty good OC. I think he did a really good job with Sacramento State. I don't think we've seen everything that the Stanford run game could be under Taylor yet. Now, I do think that the problem is, of course, is like USC is going to score a ton of points throwing the football in this game. No question. But I think Stanford's going to score enough to cover.
That's the question. Can Stanford get to 30? Because USC is going to put 60 up in this game. I think that's the move. The over is the move. The over 70. I mean, if USC doesn't put up 50 points, I would be shocked. I mean,
yeah,
this pass defense is garbage. And Stanford's going to give up a ton of points. So I think the over is the better move, but I think Stanford could do it. I think, like you mentioned, that tight end is going to be a problem. I think they'll be able to run the ball okay. But I mean, it was interesting to me is Patu wasn't the quarterback. Ashton Daniels was.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm curious to see what he's able to do.
I mean, they have 28 to San Jose State.
Yeah.
And we got a good example of like where San Jose State sits versus like a decent Power 5 defense this week.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you go like, holy smokes, like Oregon State stripped of all its players is actually better than what we have elsewhere. So, okay. All right. Give me Stanford. I think 29.5 is a lot. I think if you're going to bet this, you should wait for that number to pop up to 30, maybe 30.5. I think it will. So just sit on that and don't pull the trigger yet. Another interesting matchup, Cal.
This game is so dumb. Smoked.
I was listening to the Cover 3 podcast and they called it the culture war.
Oh, this is
the civil war, the holy war.
This game is absolutely like QAnon versus like Young Socialists of America. Like,
everything that's wrong in America.
Literally, like you could put it all in one stadium. Like,
Cal beat the doors off of North Texas, 58-21, and they did it with an injured Sam Jackson. Yeah. So I don't. We'll have to keep a lookout for what his. And it'd be interesting to see. Like, look, Hugh Freeze. Say what you want. I mean, that guy is a good coach,
yeah.
And he's going to be able to put some scheme together. And he's got a new team that he's trying to piece together. But he was planning for Sam Jackson, and now he's got like Finley, the transfer from, I think, Syracuse.
Yeah.
Or was it NC State? I got to remember. I think it's Syracuse. It's NC State. Brett Johnson started in this game, Rob. Like, congratulations. I'm so glad to see him back on the field. He didn't have a lot of stats in the game, right. But, you know, after 3 years of just terrible, terrible news and just injuries and a car accident, he's back on the field. I mean, they were able to run the ball against North Texas. Was North Texas rush defense good? I think that's the question.
It's really hard to evaluate where we have North Texas. They got a new coaching staff in. They were better offensively last year, but Ani, who I had forgotten had gone on to the NFL, wasn't there, right? So, like, it's a new coaching staff. Like, they and what Cal did really well in this game, even better, like, I mean, aside from, like, yes, they had an offensive explosion. They were able to throw the ball. They were able to run the ball. North Texas defense, I have a hunch, is going to come back and be really bad. But Cal shut down North Texas's run game, like just totally shut it down in a way that we haven't seen Cal do in a while. That's, I think, probably like going to be one of the things I think I take into this game is is Cal able to actually like slow down someone's run game? Are they able to slow down Auburn's run game, you know, here? Because Auburn, I mean, UMass like is decent under Don. They're bad, but they're not as bad as they used to be under Don, you know, with Don Brown there. And Don Brown is a very good defensive mind. And Auburn just waxed them. I mean, they got 6.6 per carry. You know, they got 8.1 through the air. The thing that if you're a Cal fan, Auburn did give up 5.2 per rush in that game against UMass. But it is like, this feels like a hard one. This feels like a hard one to evaluate because like, I'm not sure where North Texas is with new coaching staff after what we saw, cause it wasn't maybe what we were expecting. And I'm not sure. I'm pretty unsure of what Auburn's going to look like in year one under Hugh Freeze. 7 points. I mean,
Peyton Thorne, by the way, Peyton Thorne's the quarterback, right? The guy that couldn't make that wide receiver from Florida State look good.
Yeah.
So just to paint that picture for Peyton, you.
I mean, he didn't have to do a lot, you know, but like, what do we think? I mean, like, you know, I mean, I think Cal's pass defense might be they're not going to be maybe a huge problem, but like this is also going to be a massive step up in talent from what Cal faced last week. I mean, Auburn may not be a complete team, but they do have a handful of complete players.
Yeah. This is probably like, there's a lot of difficult lines here, and 7 is a good line for this game. Yeah. My worry for Cal is Hugh Freeze is a very strong offensive mind, and he's good. What was Cal's defense last year?
Last year they struggled. They were at 58 overall last season. 60 in effective rush, 61 in effective pass. I mean, no real big standout like horrific numbers, but I mean, 58 overall is a bad Power 5 defense. That's what sort of like worries me is that. We may not know much about, like, North Texas is a full on enigma. We're not going to really know a lot about them until we get a couple more games under our belt.
Yeah. Just looking at, I'm just going back and looking at the depth here. I mean, they bring back most of their wide receivers. I'm talking about Cal. Yeah. I mean, Jaden Ott returns. Byron Cardwell, by the way, is hurting out for the year. I don't know. Trusting Ben Finley and Cal's. What am I doing? Give me Auburn. I'll lay the points. I know it's a tough road game. Cal wins non-conference games, so just keep that in mind. Like, this might be my UCLA doesn't care about, you know, non-conference games, so the exact opposite. I just, backup quarterback, bad defense against Hugh Freeze. I think Auburn covers. I think it's not going to be a blowout, but I think Auburn covers the game.
Yeah, I mean, like, this feels like one, like, I like Spadaval. I think we talked about, Cal could have a fun offense. I think their defense is bad still. They might be in like the 30s, but that's not going to be like even close to the toughest defense that Auburn faces this season. So, yeah, give me Auburn. I mean, at home too. Like, I mean, it'll be dumb and loud.
Oh, it's at Auburn. That's right. Wait, are you sure?
No, I'm not.
I might have said versus. Let me double check. Sorry, live audio.
I forgot.
It's at Cal. I'm sorry. That was my fault.
It'll be quiet and not loud.
Yeah, quiet.
I mean, there'll be a lot of Auburn fans there. Give me Auburn. Oh, God. Auburn on the road with Thorne at quarter. Yep. Well, let's do it.
Gross. All right. One more game, and then we got to talk about Oregon State here. Arizona is a 9-point favorite on the road against Mississippi State. They say dog. Are they a dog? They're a dog. Yeah, you're right. Like, I'm favorite. Sorry. I'm kind of a mess right now. Putting these,
that'd be crazy. Yeah,
what am I talking about? Look, Arizona snapped its years long losing streak to NAU. So that was great. Congratulations to the Wildcats for that. They looked fine. I mean, like, Jaden Delora looked like Jaden Delora. McMillan, their wide receiver, is good, and they got a good rushing game. Like, this is the same team. I think the one thing on my end is I was worried about the interior defensive line, and they played NAU, so you got to keep expectations, but they did seem more competent with Bill Norton, who ended up starting, and I was worried about that because it didn't seem like he was the Georgia transfer and didn't look like he was really good, and he might be. So let's say this is Arizona on paper with a 20% better defensive line is probably what we have. Trayden Stukes is out. They have a couple offensive linemen that are banged up. And they go to Mississippi State. I don't know that much about Mississippi State this year. Obviously, the death of Mike Leach. Yeah. They bring in the defensive coordinator, is now the head coach. And I know they shifted the offense, which is a travesty. I'm like, going from like a straight up air raid to like more of a like conservative offense with the personnel as a choice. What do we need to know about Mississippi State?
The thing
you know
about Mississippi State is they have a good defense. So Zach Arnett, their head coach, was their defensive coordinator. Yeah. Runs that San Diego State 3-3-5. They were at number 10 overall in Beta Rank last season on defense. That's the main takeaway. And they were at 8 overall in effective pass, which of course is what Arizona likes to do. This is the trouble. I think if you're Arizona, is like, you trust Jaden Delora? In the spotlight.
No. The answer is always no.
In the spotlight. Now, what I think is interesting, and now Arizona does have an injury to freshman guard Polito, so they may move around. Like, I thought they could run the ball. They look like they might be able to run the ball better than they did last season, which might be interesting as far as the offense goes. But they're going to have, this is going to be the real challenge for Arizona's offense, right? Like, they finished at in the 30s last season offensively. Like, going against a top 10 defense is going to give them some trouble. Offensively, Mississippi State is a big question mark. I mean, they blew out their opponent, Southeast Louisiana Lions. Shut them down they really shut down Southeast Louisiana, their offense. And then Rodgers, threw for 227. He seems really competent. The interesting thing is they ran the ball a ton. They ran for 300 yards in this game. So you're going to see something more balanced from Mississippi State than we saw last year, which is, maybe an advantage if you're Arizona, because the pass defense wasn't great last year.
Well, the thing, so
and the run defense wasn't either. So I guess
Yeah, that was my, that was gonna be my point. Is I watched a decent amount of this game, and my big note was they still can't stop the run up the middle, or yeah. They can't run the ball up the middle was actually the takeaway on my end. So
for Arizona,
a little bit different.
Yeah. I mean, like they definitely, if they bust runs, it tends to be much more to the outside. I mean, it's 9 on this. Like that Betarang's got it at 7.5. But 9 on the road. Jaden Delora's good for at least one pick against the defense. Yep. This good, he's good for at least one. If he's good for, if he gets 2, Arizona's gonna lose by 17.
I don't think their offensive line, I think the offensive line is better.
Yes.
I don't think it's great.
No, I think Arizona's receivers, they're not as clearly Mississippi State is going to see some better receiver rooms in the SEC this year. But I still think, like, even with Dorian Singer gone, Arizona still has a really good receiving room here. I mean, I think this game should be better than it was last season. This game was not close last year. And Arizona's offense kind of bumbled around in large parts of the game. I think that's going to be the case again, but less so. Like, I think Arizona is going to keep it closer. 9 feels tough because, like, I feel like Arizona could keep this below 10 points. But I like Mississippi State. I cannot in good conscience take Jaden Delora and Johnny Manson. They have to prove it to me that they can not do dumb things. Cause Delora had some, even in the game against NAU, there were some patented Jaden Delora roller coaster moments.
Yeah. I mean, there was a drop pick through right to the NAU guy. Went right through his hands.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I get it. I get the spread. Arizona is a better team this year, I think, than they were last year. I still don't trust them on the road in a hostile environment against a team that has a great defense. Yeah. So give me, I will lay the points and take Mississippi State. The only other team to talk about here, Rob, is Oregon State, which beat San Jose State and beat them, frankly, in a more impressive fashion than USC did. I don't know if San Jose State is a good team, because I'm looking at the box score. It was interesting that they were able to put up a better defensive performance than USC. I thought that, but then I look at I think it's one of two things. I mean, it could be one of three things. First of all, San Jose State could be bad.
Yeah.
But let's assume that they're okay. Yeah. Let's assume that the offense is okay and they bottle them up. Either their new defensive coordinator is just a wizard, or San Jose State is bad. Cause I'm looking at that.
I'm willing to say Trent Bray. And I said that, like, he made impossibly huge improvements in 2 years. Right. I mean, in a way that I didn't think was, even me who talks all the time about coordinators, right. I was like, coordinators matter. He made a huge difference. I would say the main difference is, like, they just the difference between them and USC is they just totally bottled them up, right? San Jose State's points came in the fourth quarter, and Jay Butterfield looked very sharp after the game was way over, I'm not sold on Oregon State's backups, maybe. I think the defense is going to fall off a bit from where they last year. That's a very high bar. They were excellent last year. But what makes Oregon State fun is, like, I don't think they're going to fall all the way off. Like, I think they're maybe still in the top 30 defensively. And I do think the offense looks better.
Yeah,
like, there's still problems offense, but
I looked at the lineup and I went, I'm such an idiot. Of course they're running a 2 tight end set, because I'm looking at their wide receivers. I'm going, who on earth are they going to throw to? I'm like, they're the tight ends. You're such a fool, Brian. Like, how did you not, like, why? So ridiculous.
Oregon State is going to run 12 personnel all day.
Yes,
like, yes, just it is. All day.
And And DJ Uyunglele gives them a running threat that they didn't have last year, and that's worth just as much as being a little bit better than Gulbranson, which I think he is.
I think, like, he's a lot better. I think the main thing with him is, like, he executes the things that you expect your quarterback to execute. He doesn't have receivers to do the spectacular, but he does all the other things really well.
He had some passes where I'm like, it was his first game. I thought his accuracy was a little bonkers for a bit, but you're right. Like, he also hit guys like right where he needed to. Yeah. He threw some ropes. There was one particular touchdown. I'm like, okay, there we go. But the legs, like him just being able to, there was a couple designed runs. I'm like, that is worth like 3 points per game right there. Just him being able to do that. Yeah. Anyway, they play like UC Davis and who cares, but, better than I thought.
Bunch. Yeah.
Yeah. So I might have to bump them up a little bit too. This is bad, Rob. I'm bumping like everybody up in terms of how good I think they are. I don't know if that's a good place to be. I think
Pac-12 actually, like, I mean, that's the problem actually coming into this year, is like the only guaranteed, like everybody sort of was like, oh, we're playing Stanford, that's a win. We're going to play Colorado, that's a win. And we're going to play ASU, that's a win. And the only one I'm like 100% sure is about as bad as we thought is probably ASU. Now we're going to find out exactly where they sit this week. Colorado looks a lot better. I don't know that Stanford's a lot better, but they're better than we thought.
They're better.
Yeah. I mean, and to the point where they could win a couple dumb games this year, you know, like.
Oh, for sure. And a little bit more energy. Like, that front seven's still good, but holy smokes, they're going to give up so many yards.
No Dwayne Akina, man. Like, that was he was the glue that held that back end together for so long, despite really, really bad coordinating. Oh,
yeah. Oh, it was pretty rough. Well, a lot to look forward to. We're going to keep an eye on these games. We'll be back. We're recording on Sunday. So this was a little bit of a later recording than normal, but thanks for bearing with us. We'll get this up today. Appreciate it. And we will catch everybody next week.